Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Over the last few years, the sale of sustainable foods saw massive growth. Between 2015 and 2022, sales of food products marketed as sustainable grew 2.7 times faster than conventionally marketed products. However, the figures in 2023 aren't looking as promising. Recent statistics by the consumer intelligence company NIQ show that in the UK, the sale of chilled meat alternatives during this year's Veganuary were down 16.8% compared to last year. And a number of brands have recently pulled their plant-based ranges from the shelves. Although plant-based is just one aspect of choosing food sustainably, a 2023 Mintel report claims that due to the cost of living crisis, sustainability is now less of a priority for consumers in general. So, are consumer attitudes towards sustainability changing? What's behind the slowdown in growth? And where could the market be heading? Well, with me to discuss this is the fantastic Klaus Grünert, Professor of Marketing at Aarhus University and founder of the MAP Research Centre. Hello there, Klaus. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you.
Fantastic to have you. Let's just sort of have a look at the situation right now. There's some suggestion that growth in the meat-free market is slowing and that consumers may be losing interest. Is that your reading of the current state of play?
Well, as you already said, the market for sustainable food is a very sort of heterogeneous thing. We have, of course, meat substitutes, plant-based food, but sustainable food is a lot of other things as well. What happens right now is probably due to a range of different factors. One thing is that if you're talking about changing meal patterns, that means we go away from meals where the meat component is the center and there is some starch and there are some vegetables to different types of meals. That is a slow process because it's culturally ingrained. It will take a lot of time. So those people that change first are, of course, those that are the most innovative. And once these have changed, then there are other people who are normally less innovative and more conservative in their eating habits. And, of course, then the change will slow down. I think that by itself is a quite natural thing. That's one thing. Another thing is, if we talk specifically about meat substitutes and meat alternatives, the sensory properties of these products are still not the top reason why people are buying these. So yeah. When people are buying these, they do it mostly for other reasons. They do it because they think it's a good thing to do, it's the right thing to do, it's ethically correct. And this sort of enthusiasm for doing the right thing will wear off over time. That's also a natural phenomenon. On the other hand, over time also, people may actually adapt their food preferences to the taste. Because we know that people get used to new tastes over time. But it's not uncommon that once people have tried this new product, the taste, which is still the main driver in food, is not quite what was expected. And then this feeling of doing the right thing, what we call moral satisfaction, is wearing off over time. That's a second point. The last point then, as you already have mentioned, of course, we've had a period with rising prices, inflation, especially last year. It's a bit better now. And of course, people have reacted by becoming more price sensitive, becoming more thrifty, having a more sort of value for money approach to buying food. And I think it's one of the big challenges for the food industry to reconcile this demand for thriftiness with the demand for more sustainable products. Because many sustainable products, like organic food, for example, has been a premium product. Had a price premium, was marketed by the food industry as the better but also more expensive alternative. And I think we're entering a phase now where sustainability becomes more mainstream, and that also means that the products marketed as sustainable cannot necessarily carry a price premium.
And I just wonder if there's a slightly different side to this as well. So if we trace the story that led to this point, back in 2015 to 21, there seemed to be phenomenal growth in the market. Now, situations like this always prompt me to put my slightly cynical hat on. Now, because I know that the food industry is very good at whipping up a frenzy and making it seem as though it's exciting. And this is a lot of this is about investment and about raising money for a company. Do you think that there was an element where the food industry, the sustainable food industry, with all of these new companies grabbing market share, was there a lot of it of industry sort of fluff, and was it great marketing, or do you feel that it was a real tangible change in consumer habits?
Well, what I think has happened is that food and sustainability has become much more prominent on the public agenda. I think it's a similar development that we had with food and health maybe 20 years ago, when that started becoming really big and everybody was talking about it, and the market was flooded with new products that had a health positioning. I think we're seeing something which is similar now. And the food industry, of course, reacts to that for several reasons. It can be genuine concern for the environment, but of course it's also market opportunities, and it's also that, of course, you don't want to be seen as being on the wrong side of history in this kind of development. So I think that the fact that it has become so prominent on the public agenda is a major factor why we have so many companies, both big and small, trying to be part of this development here.
And do you think, I mean, it did seem like a real moment in time when this suddenly exploded. And I wondered if you, I mean, it felt as though there were a lot of reasons for this. A lot of work by activists bringing lots of important issues to the front so that people would really think more about how they ate. Also, a lot more fuss around the COP. Climate change conferences, they became much more of an important thing, were very well covered by media sources. Is it also a moment in time? There's been a lot more talk about the level of temperature rise in the atmosphere. Do you think that with all of these things and COVID, there was a sort of a combination of factors that made now the most important time to think about sustainability?
Well, I think it's a gradual development. I don't think such changes happen overnight. Now, of course, there can be thresholds where it becomes so big in the public discussion that people start to pay much more attention to it. But we don't have any sort of disruptive things happening when it comes to food habits. Now, they change gradually and it takes time. But it's clear that... as I said, the sustainability in food has become a big thing. People are talking about it. And that, of course, means in the end, it will also have an impact on the food choices that they make. But as soon as it comes to food choices, you also have to realize there are a lot of other factors that play a role. And sustainability is most likely not sort of the major one for most people. There are always activists where this is very important. But for most others, and again, it replicates the development we had with food and health maybe 20 years ago, it's an additional factor to take into account when you make choices. And it has an effect on the choices that people actually make, but it's gradual and it will take some time to make major shifts.
So in terms of an individual's impact, what tangible impact do consumers have on the ecological crisis? Now, sustainable eating practices are just one tool in the toolbox. Although, I mean, it seems pretty fundamental to me, but that's because I'm obsessed with food and the impact that food has on the planet. But how much of an effect can sustainable eating have on achieving our climate change goals, for instance?
Well, I'm not an ecologist, but I do research on consumer behavior. But everybody tells me that food production accounts for about 1/3 of greenhouse gas emissions, for example. I mean, that is huge. And food production has an impact on many other things as well. It has an impact on land use and water use and biodiversity. So food production has a major effect on the sustainability of the planet, and in the beginning this was not so much in focus, because the sustainability discussion itself, of course, is much older than the discussion about food and sustainability. Now that food has come into focus is a much more recent phenomenon, but it really has come into focus now. Consumers play a really important role in the green transition of the food sector because everything that the food industry can find out doing can be approved or disapproved by the consumer. Consumers can delay the green transition by not buying the more sustainable alternatives, or they can speed it up by asking for it. It's crucial to have the consumer on board, and that's also why there is so much focus now on the role of the consumer in the green transition.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's turn to some of your work now. You published a study in 2012 on the barriers preventing people from making sustainable food choices. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What barriers did you discover?
If you want consumers to make more sustainable choices, the first thing is they need to know which of the alternatives, which of the products they could buy are more sustainable. I mean, that's really basic. Consumers, in many cases, are uncertain about what is more and what is less sustainable. They've learned a few things. They have learned, I think many people have learned that eating too much meat is not good for the environment. But apart from that, there's a lot of uncertainty. It's just the transportation, for example, important. None of the apples come from New Zealand. That must be unsustainable. Many people think that. If you look at the numbers, many times the transportation is really a minor factor in the overall environmental impact of food production. So there is a lot of uncertainty. If you want people to make sustainable choices, they need to know. And when I did this study 10 years ago, already at that time, there was some information available. There was, of course, labeling on organic foods. There was fair trade labeling. There was something on seafood. Rainforest Alliance. There were a number of things that were related to sustainability. And I was looking at what are the barriers for people actually making use of that information. And we know a lot from the earlier discussion, nutrition labeling, and the issues that we face here are quite parallel. Now, people, when they buy food, they are in a rush. Many of the choices that we make are habitual. Now, people don't look a lot at the products. Many decisions are made within a few seconds when people are in the store. Now, so it's actually a major task attracting people's attention and having them look at some piece of information that is on the product. That is one major barrier. Another barrier is that people may misunderstand what the label is all about. Sustainability is a complex phenomenon. It's multidimensional. We can have labels that go into detail. They will be more difficult to understand. Or we can have a summary label. That's what is being talked about now. But then people will ask, what does it mean? What does it stand for? So there are a lot of issues there also with the understanding. And then there is the issue with turning it into decisions. First of all, here we have the issue as I already said, sustainability is for most people not the main reason why they buy a food product. It's an additional criterion that they can use. The main reason is the taste of the product, the price of the product, maybe family acceptance. To some extent, these days also sometimes health. And then there is sustainability. And if there is conflict, even though people may know that one product is more sustainable, they may not buy it because the other criteria have more weight in their decision-making. But many times people don't think a lot. People may have good intentions. I want to buy more sustainable alternatives, but when they are in the supermarket, they forget about it. Because then everything is quick and spontaneous and people are in a rush, and much of the choices they made are driven by what they usually do. And breaking up such habits, again, is something that doesn't happen overnight. I think we are on our way, but it doesn't happen overnight. And these barriers that I discussed in this publication there 10 years ago, they are still there. Some things have changed. And what has changed is, as I already said, we are on our way towards getting better information on what is more and what is less sustainable. We have this discussion also at the EU level on sustainability labeling, eco-labeling across products, some kind of simplified model based on some kind of index. I have several proposals for that. We are in that process. That may take some time before it's really implemented, but we are in that process. It will be a major step, but for the reasons I mentioned and these barriers I mentioned, one should not expect that it will change consumer buying behavior overnight.
Yeah. Now, we've spoken a lot about the concept of eco-labeling and sustainability labeling on this podcast, and it seems as though the food industry is both enthusiastic and terrified at the same time of the idea. And they constantly say, well, it's just so complex to be able to explain what works and what doesn't and what the final barriers are to bring a product into the eco-space. Do you think that's a little bit nonsensical? Do you think they just need to shut up and get on with it? And have you seen any useful or reliable system yet for labeling?
Well, as I said, I'm not an expert into the nitty-gritty of how to measure environmental impact and all that kind of thing. I've seen a range of models, range of proposals on how it can be done. Now, the major decision is whether you want to give information separately on different dimensions of sustainability, or whether you combine them into an index. There is no easy solution here. Because
we had the same problem with nutritional labeling, didn't we?
Exactly. We had the same problem, but in nutrition labeling, we seem to end up now with a Nutri-Score, which is one-dimensional, graduated, color-coded, simple. And I think we will probably end up with something similar with eco-labeling, because that has the best chance of being used when people are in the store. And then one should complement it for those who are interested with some more information that people can access, for example, online or via an app or something like that. And that way we can accommodate the need for something that is simple and at the same time can accommodate those that want to know what's behind. I think that is one major step. Major issue with regard to eco-labeling is what do we want to achieve with it? Do we want people to change from meat to plant-based products, or do we also want to make people to make decisions within product categories? Some meat is more sustainably produced than other meat, some vegetables, and so on. That's much more complicated because in many cases we don't have the data. That is another huge barrier. And I think, of course, it's good that people move towards more plant-based diets. That is sort of a major thing to be achieved here. But of course, we can also achieve something by having people move towards more sustainable alternatives in small steps within product categories. That would require that people also are able to single out the more sustainable alternative also within a product category. And many people will find that as easier because it doesn't involve major changes in the overall meal pattern. Now, these have to come as well, but as I said, that will take more time.
And I think also this may be why blockchain data sets are still a little bit far away, a little bit at arm's reach, because I think a lot of food companies think, oh, I don't want to give them everything. Now, your study was written about 11 years ago in a pretty fast-moving market. Would you say that the barriers to a green diet have changed at all since the study, or is it the environment within which those decisions are made that have changed?
Yeah. As I said, there has been a lot of changes in the interest in the topic of sustainability. And that also means there is a different situation now when it comes to the motivation that people have with regard to looking for or looking at or paying attention to that kind of information. That is a change that is relevant. And we are in the process of more information being made available. I think these two are the major changes. Apart from that, the major barriers with regard to that people make food choices mainly by habit, mainly spontaneously, that the degree of deliberation in choosing food is many times low, have not changed dramatically. They have changed a little because we have done some research on how people reacted during the COVID pandemic with regard to their food-related behaviors. And that showed that we had a group of people that actually became more deliberate in their food choices. Maybe not dramatically, but a little bit more deliberate, at least in their own perception. So we may have this development here that we have a development towards a little bit more deliberation. And we have some new data from last year that shows that tendency is actually still there. So we may actually be in a process where food choices become a little bit more deliberate. But we should not have unrealistic expectations. The major barriers are still there, because food is something we buy frequently. We make many decisions. There's no way in which every single decision people make about buying food can be thought through and deliberate.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in an economic crisis, what tends to break first in terms of consumer buying patterns? You know, is there a moral or cultural aspect that holds out until we really can't afford things? Obviously, cost becomes a major concern, but then there's a sort of moral relativity to the other issues: animal welfare, environmental footprint, health issues. Is there a pattern of what crumbles first?
Well, it's clear that if we have a situation with rising food prices, and rising prices in general, especially for energy, as we had last year, many people become more thrifty. Many people look more at prices. Many people change their food choices when we're talking about food, for example, by buying cheaper brands, buying non-branded products, buying more on discount stores, and in some cases cutting back or cutting down on purchase of certain items altogether. I mean, that's natural. Obviously, that will happen. And to the extent that products that are marketed as more sustainable carry a price premium, it will be at the expense also of these products. But that is the challenge that also I mentioned earlier, because as long as we regard the more sustainable alternatives as a more expensive premium product, now we cannot appeal to everybody. And it's a challenge for the food industry when people become more thrifty, that we need to find sustainable alternatives that do not carry a price premium. And that is partly, of course, a challenge for the food industry. It's also a challenge for retailers, because retailers, the demands that they formulate to their suppliers have a big impact. If retailers say, we want all our suppliers of seafood to be certified by this and that eco label, they can bring about change, and they can communicate that to their buyers. But to their buyers, they will say, all our products now live up to this standard. And in this way, they can further sustainability without forcing people to make a choice between a more expensive and more sustainable, or a less expensive but also less sustainable product.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering how much supermarkets and brands and the food industry itself could do more to encourage sustainable food choices. You keep saying that it's about information and giving the consumer information, but it's also about how that information is presented. And that brings us into marketing and advertising and all these very complex areas as well. Do you think things like convenience and accessibility are hugely important? And do you think the food industry ought to take more responsibility, or are they doing pretty well already?
Well, of course they can do more. I mean, I think it's happening. I think there's huge interest. I think all, or at least most, large food producers have some policy on sustainability these days. A lot of things are happening, but of course they could do more. If we start with supermarkets, I've already mentioned the demands they can formulate to their suppliers. That's one major thing. They can obviously do their own labeling in their stores. And we know that supermarkets, by the way, they place products by store layout and a lot of other things that they can do in their stores, that has an influence on people's choices. All these things that we discuss under this heading of nudging. That's obviously something where retailers can do more. But manufacturers as well, of course, if you look upstream in the value chain, can do something. Also, food manufacturers can, in their selection of suppliers, put more emphasis on sustainability and certify their suppliers with regard to some sustainability-related criteria. Now they can obviously label their products and provide information on their products about sustainability. And not least, of course, they can do something with regard to product development. Because one of the major barriers, as I've said, is when there is a conflict in the minds of consumers between, for example, taste and sustainability and maybe price. If the product that is cheapest also was the most tasty and the most sustainable, there would be no issue, obviously. Everybody would buy it. So the food industry obviously can do a lot in order to diminish these conflicts. And what we touched upon in the beginning, the sensory properties of meat alternatives are one thing. These sensory properties should be improved. And I know it's difficult, and it's not something that can be easily done. And I know there is work being done on that. But generally speaking, product development that reduces the conflicts that consumers experience between the different criteria that they go for, taste, price, health, convenience, sustainability, that is a major task for our food producers.
Now, you've mentioned a couple of times that people's shopping habits are hard to change, and they're often cultural or habitual, making them sort of deep set and hard to tackle. I wondered, do you think anyone and everyone is up for grabs in terms of being able to help them make different changes? Or are there some demographics or groups or certain ages or any particular strain of person that is harder to change and that needs much more help to be able to make sustainable choices?
Well, it's clear that people differ both in their interest in sustainability and also in their propensity to change. And these are not the same things, because some people are just more conservative, either in general or at least when it comes to eating, and other people are very innovative and regard it as a positive challenge to try new things and new recipes and so on. So people do differ, and that's quite clear. That's also why those that change first, of course, are those that are most innovative, and then it will slow down. And we will get to people where what I just mentioned before, having new products that reduces these conflicts, become more important. Demographics play a role, even though in the end it's more a question about values and attitudes than it's a question about demographics. But yes, of course. I mean, we know that women, for example, are more concerned with sustainability than men. We know that higher levels of education usually go with a higher interest in sustainability and also a propensity to make that part of your food choices. So, of course, we have these demographic characteristics. In the long run, of course, it's important to get everyone on board. I just don't think we should concentrate on the most difficult cases here in the start. I think when we want to bring about change, it's always a good thing to start with those that are willing to change. And then gradually we can come to the others, because when those that are willing to change do change, they also create a development. And those that are more slow to change many times are influenced by what the majority is doing. And when we get people moving along and start with those that are most willing to change, then eventually everybody will come along, even though it will take some time.
Fantastic. Okay, so my last question really is about you, Klaus. What do you think? Do you sit there? Does Klaus sit there thinking, it's so frustrating. Why don't people just do this? And why doesn't the food industry just do this? What are the things that make your blood boil, that make you think, come on, all you need to do is this, and that would help something happen a little quicker?
In my own view, of course, I'm biased, and I'm biased.
You're allowed to. This is a personal opinion. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, sure, of course. Well, I'm a consumer researcher. I spent most of my academic life trying to understand what consumers are doing. And at the same time, I've spent a lot of time talking to people in the food industry about what I think consumers think when they make choices, but also about the importance of actually understanding consumers. One of the things that that I really can become worried about is that one thinks one can bring about changes without really trying to understand consumers. Now, I meet a lot of time, and that goes many quarters, that goes the food industry, but that also goes NGOs and other people that are engaged in the green transition. Now, we need to educate people. We need to tell them what is the right thing to do, because once people understand that, they will do it. And we know that's not the case. Now, we should learn from our attempt to teach people healthy eating, where for 30 years at least, we've been telling people what are the right things to eat when you want to have a healthy diet. And we know a lot of people have not been following that advice. We need to understand the way in which people make choices. We need to accommodate the way in which people make choices. We can not expect to make dramatic changes in the way people choose food, at least not in the short run. What really concerns me sometimes is when people say, we can do this, we can do that, and then consumers will buy it. Now, we meet, for example, people saying, just when the right products are on the shelf, supermarkets can just do that, then people will buy it. People will buy what is on the shelf. It's not true. A lot of products fail in the supermarket. A lot of products come on the shelf and people don't buy them. Some people are overestimating underestimating the power of consumers through their decision making. We need to acknowledge that. We need to put the consumer in the center of the green transition in order to bring it about.
So I did say that was my last question, but I've got a little one to follow it. I'm very sorry. Are you optimistic about us hitting our UN sustainability goals?
I am optimistic in the sense that we have development. I am optimistic that sustainability being so much on the public agenda and everybody being concerned, everybody doing something, a lot of political interest, a lot of interest in industry, a lot of interest among consumers, I am optimistic that there will be change. Whether we will hit the targets, I don't know. That's very difficult to predict. Because change is difficult. Changing human behavior is especially difficult. Changing human behavior that is ingrained in habits and cultural traditions is extremely difficult. And that is the area we are talking about here. But I'm very optimistic that there is a development in the right direction and we can do more. And us sitting here and talking about it is also part of that. We can do more in trying to bring that about.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for that. Very perceptive, and I'm very pleased that you're optimistic as well, because I think we have to be in order to make any change happen. So, Klaus Grünert, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.